that all their things are like that are not intro.
Welcome to the Everyday Sniper. You got Frank from Sniper's Hide here, and again, we're back in that first month of 2020. So we're going to bring you our first interview, something we've been trying to do for a while. I know Mike and I have talked about it. Mike Bush from Voodoo Gunworks, they're doing the great 22 stuff that they're doing. Welcome to the Everyday Sniper podcast, Mike.
Thanks, Frank. I really appreciate it. You're right. It's been a little bit difficult to get this put together, but I'm glad to see it happen and good to be on with you today.
Yeah, I saw Paul at Mile High like 2-3 days ago. I had to jump into Mile High and go pick up some stuff. And Paul and his wife were there because they come over from Utah, correct?
Yeah. They drove up from St. George, just before the first of the year and, spent, New Year's on the road. It was a really good trip for them. They had a really good time with Randy and Diane and Mike and the guys there in the shop. So, yeah, it was really good for us.
Excellent. And I mean, you guys have, just the 22 stuff has gone through the roof, taken the precision rifle shooting world by storm. And almost like PRS describes a type of event. Voodoo's becoming to describe the 22s, like everything's compared to what you guys are doing. So just to kind of, introduce yourself to everybody, go back in time, because I know we've mentioned you've been on Sniper's Hide for, at least 8, 10 years almost now, and you've always sort of played around, getting the 22s into a full-size stock type of situation where they become more than, the crickets for the little kids. And I mean, you've been a huge driver of that and probably one of the pioneers of it. So let everybody know what's going on.
So, you're absolutely right. And it's always been an interest of mine. The Hide has been basically the center of all of it. I mean, everything has been discussed on the Hide, through good times and bad times and good times again. And it's been, like you say, it's been one of those developments that has kind of taken the shooting world by storm. And, if I were to put my finger on it, I'd say that, from a gaming standpoint, the PRS games and, things like that. I mean, certainly the Rimfire has grown to a point that the Rimfire games are very similar to the centerfire stuff, but the 22 has always been a lot more capable than what I felt like it was being given credit for. And what really kind of tipped me over the edge, it started on the Hide, quite frankly, from a group in the Colorado Springs area, not far from you. Nowadays they're known as the 40X Mafia, but before they even had that handle or were even as organized as they are now from the events that they shoot in, all together as a group and, their jocularity together on the forums. What I recognized, or at least, maybe I hallucinated it, I don't know, but what I thought I saw was this forward movement of, what the Rimfire could really do and what they were trying to get it to do. And maybe they didn't know that's what they were doing, but it looked to me like they were really just kind of asking for a true to scale repeater that you could emulate a full size rifle with. And, you mentioned the crickets and, other platforms like that. And certainly, that being a more youth oriented rifle, even the larger rifles than the cricket were still smaller than, conventional rifles, and you had to shoot them differently and you didn't shoot the same way. And, if you were shooting, cans and squirrels and things like that, people seemed to be satisfied with that. But it didn't take long once this all happened that I took my first long range shot with a 22 in what was one of the first 40X repeaters that I built on a steel plate at 472 yards. And from that point I was hooked and it just kind of grew from there.
I mean, for sure. Like I've mentioned a couple times on the podcast, you know, with your rifle at 200 yards, it's the same as my 6.5 Creed at 1,000.
That's, you know, that's crazy. And it's true. And when we rolled this thing out, we were invited by Lapua to attend the NRA World Championship shoot in West Virginia in 2017, September 2017. We received the invite in August, right? We were just standing up at that point, and we had, you know, we had kind of a shop here in St. George, but what we had before we had the shop was my R&D lab in Connecticut, which is a full CNC based R&D lab. So I built the first 9 rifles in that lab and tested a few of them. And we took 7 of those 9 rifles, brand new, no, not even any finish on them, to the NRA World Shoot. And over the course of 3 days, well over 5,000 rounds downrange with no issues whatsoever. Not a single failure, not a single, you know, stop the venue because we have to fix a rifle. And Emil Praslik was there. And I've told this story a couple of times. And, you know, they, because it was a 22, you know, we didn't have squirrels and light bulbs and things to shoot at, but we did have this square range, you know, maxed out at 35 yards, which didn't really show everyone what we really wanted
right, you
them
couldn't
to see.
So, do the capabilities.
Yeah, exactly. So I picked up the rifle after we got everything set up, and right next door to us, Lapua is set up with a Barrett 6.5 Creedmoor, and they have a plate rack at 485 yards. So Emil's over there, and I had some guys ask me, you know, because I just picked the rifle up and started walking and said, hey, where are you going? I said, I'm going over here to shoot that target. And I just kind of motioned in the direction of the target. And they said, which one? I said, that one out there. And they said, bullshit. And I said, well, watch. So they came over and, you know, I said, hey, Emil, I'm going to take a poke at that thing. And he said, that'd be awesome or something to that effect.
Yeah,
right?
He's a great dude. I love hanging with him. I hung with him last year at the Precision Rifle Expo. He's fun.
Oh, my gosh. Well, one day he might tell you, if you haven't heard it, the monkey story. But, we, you know, that's a whole other thing. So we're taking so Emil and Paul Parrott are taking ammo apart, and they're measuring bullets, and Emil's plugging all this into his ballistic solver, right? So he comes up with a firing solution for the 22 at 485. I mean, none of this existed like it does now. You can't find a ballistic app that doesn't have some 22 firing solution in it. So he gave me the hold, and he said, wind's calm. It was 96 MOA. And with a night force, with a night force 3 to 15, I didn't have quite that in the mechanical. So I used that plus what I had in the reticle, plus a little bit of guesswork below the reticle. And he said, wind's calm. So I pressed the trigger and you wait and bing, first round hit. And at that point, the whole thing blew up. That's how we entered. That's right. It entered the market that way. You know, we were invited in the place of Anschutz. And we've been invited back every year to do the same thing. And it's really interesting that they no longer put us in a square range that maxes out at 35 yards. We have targets out to this past September, we had targets out to 275. But when there was no activity on the other targets, everyone was shooting at those things and hitting it. So it was pretty cool.
And I never would have thought about this capability with the 22. I was one of those guys that looked at it as being, you know, the 50 yards and in kind of thing, and not and you know, to explain like some experience, because I wanted sort of a 22 trainer indoor rifle kind of thing. And the what put me onto that was when I was down at Rifles Only, they would bring in every now and then a disabled vet. And there was a program to give them the Olympic rifles and 22s, and we would get these guys to come down there, and, you know, they'd be missing arms and fingers and hands and things like that. A lot of it was the guys blown up with the IEDs, and they would get those FWB Olympic rifles, and I thought those were so nice. And it was like, wow, I want to do one of those $3,000 Olympic rifles. And then, you know, like the following year, I was at SHOT Show, and this was around, I was doing some stuff with Field and Stream, And so I was going into their private little room upstairs. They would feed you breakfast and lunch if you had the tag to get in SHOT Show and to go on the third floor up there and get in their room. Well, every day I would actually be sitting with the president and like VP from Walter or Walther.
Oh,
you
yeah.
Know, you know, the guys yeah. from Walther. And I was like, yep. yeah, I'm really into what your 22s doing, the Olympic stuff and all this. And so it was like seeing those Olympic rifles, because I have this desire with the Olympic rifle adjustability. I really think we missed the boat on tactical precision rifle adjustability that they get out of an Olympic rifle. You know, I think stock makers should have looked at that a little more. And I've talked with Tom Manners about it, and Tom's starting to bring out like multiple position butt plates for this year. And this goes back with me and Tom forever, but it all came from Olympic 22s. But I never looked at a 22 beyond that until Voodoo came.
Nice. Yeah. And you know, and you're right about the adjustability of the stocks. And you know, Tom does a great job of, first off, listening, and then second, executing. And one of my favorite stocks, in fact, my truck rifle is in one of his compact stocks. And it's perfect for what I use it for. It's light, and you know, it wields very easily. But yeah, I mean, I think there's going to be a greater movement towards that. And it's interesting that you mention it, because we've already developed our, you know, Olympic style chassis, and you know, with all that adjustability, no one has seen it. And I probably shouldn't say anything about it because our phones are going to blow up. But you know, but yeah, that, you know, that there's a big look forward from us in, you know, what that looks like, you know, rimfire competition at that level. So of course we'll have to have something to put in that chassis, which isn't that far away either. So
well, I won't say put my name on one, because then everybody will call you and bug you, but you know the deal.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and I don't mind that so much. I mean, I'm very open, you know, on the hide. I answer a lot of questions, and there's times I probably say more than I should. But, you know, when you get right down to it, we're doing this because of the shooting community, right? We support these guys. You know, this whole thing started by listening to a particular group, you know, within the shooting community. And that's who we serve. And we're not serving some big corporate mindset that, you know, that first question they ask is, well, what's the market, right? And, you know, my answer typically to that is, well, who gives a shit? And, you know, because that's not what we're serving, and we don't have to. And it's good to have that luxury.
You created your market.
We did. We
did.
So
what's the market? Well, wait till I create it, then I'll show you it.
Yeah, I mean, I, you know, we don't necessarily follow what that is, right? I mean, we do our own thing out ahead of everyone else, or out at least to the side, and maybe we don't move to, you know, ahead until, you know, we really kind of figure out what we're going to do with it ourselves. But we just function differently in that way. And you know, what's really cool is, you know, there's one other company that I know of that functions this way that I'm incredibly fond of, and we talk about it all the time. And that's, you know, the guys over at JP, and you know, we have a really good industry partnership with them. And, but yeah, I mean, it's that like-mindedness that you ultimately end up seeing in what comes out and what it is that you do. And, you don't have to be that company that treats R&D, and instead of R&D being research and development, you have to treat it as rip off and duplicate, because you're too busy trying to answer that question. Well, what's the market?
Right.
Instead of being able to say, well, who gives a shit? Right. So yeah, we tend to develop that way. And right now, you know, the things that we have coming out at SHOT, you know, as a small company with, myself having been, you know, the majority of the time, like up until a few months ago, the only design, develop, engineer guy in the company. I think you know Matt DeLude. He's now on board with us. You know, we say as a part-time basis, but I don't think there's many hours, you know, that we're not doing something together that he's, you know, involved in and kind of runs with. And You know, that's helped us out a lot as far as how we've, you know, how we're going in the SHOT Show and what we have planned after that. So, but yeah, it's been really fun.
I mean, look at the, and the nice thing is you guys can, I mean, in the last 3 months, how many actions just came out that you guys can build off of?
As far as rib fires?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you have two. You know, from bigger companies, and they are very similar, I guess I could say, to what we've done.
Yeah, well, you knew you know, guys were again ripped off in.
yeah. I mean, and that, you know, that's kind of how the industry works for the most part, and I'll never be a part of that. You know, if I do something that looks similar, you know, no different than what I just did with the new firing pin tip we have, I'm very open. Like I said on the hide, hey, I didn't invent this, but I did adapt it to what it is that we're doing as part of what is our system, instead of just seeing it somewhere and, you know, then getting it out there and treating it like it's something I did. And it's not within the voodoo culture to treat things that way.
Nice. And just as a side note, really quick to kind of tangent us a little, I really enjoyed shooting as Mike Bush with Adam Burke from JP, because I took your slot at the Competition Dynamics event.
Yeah.
So it was awesome not having my name on the score sheet and having it be your name, although you shot really well. I think you only over the weekend only dropped like 8 targets. So not too bad, man.
You did a good job. Well, I can tell you there's probably no one more fortunate than me to have someone like you shoot in my place, because, you know, that's something I really wanted to do. And Adam and I planned on it for some number of months. And at the last minute, you know, so I have my own R&D company outside of Voodoo. And I do other projects that don't conflict with what it is we do here. You know, fiduciarily, as an owner of Voodoo, I'm very careful in the types of projects that I take on. So I have this big project that I've been working on for 3 years, and it's kind of one of those, you know, seat of the pants type, you know, management styles, and everything. Like tomorrow I might end up in, you know, Fiji or something, because it was a good idea at the management level to say, hey, let's go look at, you know, whatever. So, and that's what happened. And, you know, as it turned out, it was a planning meeting at this huge ranch in Wyoming that a big group of us, you know, had to go to. And of course, it ended up right smack in the middle of this team safari. And, you know, writing that email to Adam was probably the hardest thing I'd done in a while, to tell him, hey, you know, I'm not going to be able to make this. I'm trying to give you as much heads up to see if you can find someone to fill in, which I'm glad he was able to do that. And I'm really glad it was you. I know that you guys had fun, because, you know, I've talked to Adam a few times since then. And because you were there, you likely are the reason he didn't use his ballistic computer that I gave him, which is a play school typewriter, like CNC type thing.
Oh, yeah.
So he didn't need that since you were there. So, but yeah, that was one of the bigger disappointments to not be able to make, but I'm glad that you were there to shoot with him.
The only weird part was, though, is when he brought the sex toy into the room and said, Mike sleeps with this, so you have to. So what was up with the big sex toy that he made me sleep with?
Well, I don't think it's a huge secret, right?
No, there's anything wrong with that.
Well, you know, I mean, the guys do over there, they do roll a little bit differently. And when in Rome, you know, I mean, mm-hmm. you're either wearing high heels or you're playing around with the things they bring with them. But, you know, that's the price of being in the group, I guess. Membership has its privileges.
It does. That there is a ritual to get in the circles of trust when you're with these various elements. You know, you have to go through the motions. You know, thank you, sir. May I have another is a thing.
Yeah, exactly. You know, just like the Navy guys have to spend their time in the barrel, right?
Yep, totally. So moving forward now, going do you see this, like the competition side of things Do you see it kind of moving beyond? I mean, because right now we really just have 22 NRL 22, which that was the smartest move those guys could have made, was to create that 22 element to their league. And so that just blew them up huge and then brought gave everybody a reason to go out and grab a Voodoo. I know you guys work with Jamelli and Rob Orman all the time. They've gone from, you know, those were Team Blaster, PRS typey guys who started this. You know, they were one of the first sponsored shooters on the block when they were shooting for Hornaday and stuff down at Rifles Only years. But then Tony got out of it when the PRS came around, wasn't a fan of some of the people there. And he's, like, I mean, waist deep with you guys in 22. And you know, I've known Jamelli for many, many, many years and was an informal part of Team Blaster with those guys. So, I mean, do you see that growing and expanding to other leagues? Are there people reaching out to you to say, hey, we're going to do a new league?
You know, I do. And outside of the NRL 22, which kind of, you know, so for Voodoo, it was an incredible, you know, aspect of timing. I mean, everything came together perfectly. I mean, the invite from Lapua, and, you know, if you were to chronologically kind of go through how this all has come about, it's really quite amazing. And the NRL 22 was stood up, you know, basically with Voodoo, and in some cases because of Voodoo, and a number of other, you know, platforms, you know, are trying to adjust to that. And they're doing a good job. You know, you have other more price point oriented platforms out there. So, you know, there's something for everyone. And you see that from CZ and Tika and, you know, some others that are, you know, trying to lean more towards what I call the true to scale platforms, which are the same, they're the platforms that are the same physical size and weight as your centerfire. So there's going to be a lot more of that in response to what is this growth. But outside of NRL 22, there's also 22 ELR, extreme long range. And this is where we're really stretching the legs of the 22, where it's common in most ELR events to have targets out, you know, at the 600 yard mark. And it's it the one that I was involved in, I don't have all the full history on it, but I do know that long range only the Brozovic crew, mm-hmm. You know, kind of they put together and we participated in that first one. I think it was the first one.
Yes, it was. And I remember exactly what you're talking about, where it was like a 400 yeah. yard plus record somebody did. But yes.
Yeah, that was actually one of our guys, that set the first, ELR world record with a Voodoo, three consecutive hits at 495. And after that, another Voodoo shooter set that record. So the ELR is becoming, you know, a lot more popular. And because of that, I'm playing with a lot of different barrel twists. And I think you'd be amazed, and I'll share it with you later. So how fast I'm spinning these bullets. I mean, it's a single-digit twist rate. And to compare the groups, you know, between a 16 twist and in this really fast twist at the distances we're shooting at is incredible. So we have something more for the ELR as that goes forward. In addition, we are coming out with our own precision bench rest action right around SHOT Show, just after SHOT Show, more than likely. But it takes that bench rest, you know, discipline a bit further in the capabilities of the action and how we're doing barrels and reamer or chamber designs and all that. So, it you know, it's definitely a single shot. It's a 6 o'clock ignition, 3 lug, 60-degree bolt lift, you know, quite an advancement in the fire control system. And because of that, I have a lot of F-class guys now, rimfire F-class guys reaching out. So, no different than we just plussed up our team Voodoo shooting guys shooting team. Mm-hmm. We have 12 guys. So Tony and Rob were our first two guys, and were with us from the beginning. And we added 10 more people to that. And these are all very highly accomplished people. But outside of being you know, incredible shooters and very capable shooters, they have to be, you know, those personalities that can extend our culture out beyond our four walls. We've done that, I think, really well in the people that we've chosen. And, you know, we're putting that together right now, kind of accidentally, I guess, in a way, with the interest that's in F class. So for bench rest, quite frankly, I want to do bench rest. I don't want to do bench rest the way it's being done right now, because, you know, in most of the events that I've kind of audited, you know, sometimes wearing the Voodoo shirt and other times not, a lot of these events are where bench rest goes to die.
Yeah.
Because I don't see any of these bench rest guys promoting what they're doing or sharing anything or paying it forward or bringing up younger shooters, you know, through attrition. You know, it's obvious to me based on what I've seen that, it's not sustainable.
And that's like given the Palma and all that, where F class, you know, originally F class was where Palma people went to die, but then it blew up bigger and now Palma's starting to fall apart because they don't do that. They don't cultivate that sort of mindset. Palma would be well served going to the 22 in doing,
you know,
a scaled down 22 thing for Palma. They would be better served going in that direction to grow in F class. I mean, honestly, for me, in you're mentioning all these different like events, when I'm sitting with my own thoughts, when I'm here in my own head and I'm looking at all of this big picture and everything's just coming at you 100 miles an hour, you know, where's the PRS? Where's the NRL? Where's the, you know, this? Where's competition dynamics? And it's all these little sort of fingers of the same hand. And I'm thinking logistically, my age, you know, all this, when you put everything together, I kind of want to go more towards 22 than I do the big stuff. Yeah, the big stuff sustains me. But for me personally shooting it, I almost want to embrace what you guys are doing more so because it's that much easier from a logistics standpoint.
Exactly. And that's 100% true. And I've lived that myself, you know, basically living in a laboratory of rimfire stuff. When I go play gun games, I don't always want to play rimfire games because, you know, that's what I do every day.
Right.
You know, for really, really extended periods during the day. So I shot a lot of three gun over the course of a couple of years. And, you know, I was really accustomed to the logistical nightmare that it is with three guns and three different types of ammo and all the gear. And, you know, you travel from the East Coast to Vegas to shoot at the Pro Gun Club and what Pete Rensing's doing, because those are the better ones. And, you know, I got physically tired from that and, you know, then was trying to find more of those kinds of games on the East Coast, which are, you know, have grown and they're doing much better. But, you know, I shot my last three gun match in September of 19. And, you know, typically I couldn't go a month without shooting three gun. I was just that hooked on it. And when I kind of weaned myself away from it and I feel better and I get more done and I'm not carrying around all this gear, you know, I'm looking for what is that replacement. And it's some of these other rimfire games that are different than what I've been doing because they're new and, you know, I'm motivated to develop, you know, actions and rifles and different platforms for them. And, you know, when you can change the game because you provide a better tool, and you don't have to, you know, as is the case with the bench rest stuff, just believe all the hocus pocus because so-and-so said that you have to slug a barrel. When you don't have to do those things and you can create something that, you know, it's more accessible to people and easier to understand and there's data to support it. And hey, here it is. Just go do ABC XYZ and they have fun. Yep. And that's how you grow that interest. And that's what we're doing. And as this continues to grow, we're certainly, you know, going to continue developing for it. I mean, we're launching 7 or 8, I think maybe 9 new things at SHOT Show.
Wow. Yeah, that's big for anybody.
Yeah, and we have more stuff behind that that's coming along as well. You know, and been working with the U.S. Olympic Training Center for a while, and we've had rifles there that have performed very well. So, a lot of this stuff I don't normally go into a lot of detail on, but you know, we're not, you know, coming out of the gate with what we came out of the gate, and you know, if I can say in a very humble way, it set the bar very high, and our challenge has been, but how do we keep raising that bar? And, you know, based on the results of testing what we're doing, we continue to do that. And that to me is cool. And it's something, I mean, when I flew to St. George on this past Sunday, the couple of days prior to that, I was up for 38 hours working on this stuff because, you know, you just hit that stride. And since my lab's at home and I don't have to go anywhere to go to work, it's right there available to me, then that's how things happen. So certainly not sustainable either, but, you know, not without a lot of fun and cool things to do.
Nice. Yeah. And one of the things I would suggest, like kind of the missing element, because the marketing has been good and what's out there has been really good as far as, hey, look at this, look at the fun you can have. I think the missing piece that you should look at with some of your team people is have them kind of start sprinkling out the data, start sprinkling
exactly.
out the drop charts and the different things and the different ammos for people, because then, you know, you can walk, like I said, logistically, you can walk into a 22 much easier. You can do this, but then people don't realize that 100 to 200 to, like you're saying, 4-5 to 600 yards, that data becomes crazy. You know, we're to zero for people, you know, like it should almost be, you know, we talk about every single day, 100 yard zeros on your precision rifle, do this, do this, do this. It should be, you know, hey, do the 50 yard zero on your 22 or the 25, you know, what's the benefit? I mean, you almost want to start creating that buzz like the AR crowd does. Do I zero at 25, 50 or 100? Do I zero, you know, and start like having people release almost technical data on the shot part of it to show people, because I think it is a little confusing, the scale side, for those who aren't familiar to scale it down, you know, and it, in my mind, that's the only missing element.
You're absolutely right. And that is exactly the conversation that we've had with our team people as we start putting all this together and we select the right people for the team based on how they, not just how well they shoot, but how they interact and how well they can convey how they do what they do behind the rifle. And you know, we have, well, you know, Tony and Rob, we have those two guys. We have two guys that, one just retired from the Marine Corps. He was originally a U.S. Marine Corps shooting team competitor. And then he became a coach for those guys. We have another guy that's
which
still
guy
on
is
the
that? I might Marine, know him.
John Selinsky.
Oh yeah, I know him. Yep, know him.
Yeah,
he was a sniper.
Solid dude.
Yeah, he's a sniper dude.
Yeah, yeah. Yep, exactly. Really, really cool dude, laid back, non-assuming. And Stephen Ferguson, one of my favorite people in the world, whom is still on the shooting team, sniper also, as I recall. But, you know, we have Mike Suttle, who is a former Marine Corps guy, incredibly highly accomplished shooter, not just in rifles, but in handguns as well. Probably one of our more decorated shooters. But these guys have that ability to just listen and convey and teach and pull people in. And, you know, because that our culture at Voodoo is built around very, very simple things. And you know, a lot of people write mission statements that they, you know, don't understand. And not only do they not understand them, they, you know, if you were to walk up and ask them, hey, what's the mission statement for your company? They can't tell you.
Right. It's a copy and paste.
It was an exercise to go through to create a mission statement, because that's what you're supposed to do, right? Companies are supposed to have a mission statement. You can walk through Voodoo. Yeah, you can walk through Voodoo right now and ask any one of the people that work on our floor, what's the Voodoo mission statement? They can tell you word for word. Because we live by what we say, and we do what we say we're going to do. And what's important within our shooting team is they understand that same culture and they function within it. And they, you know, they take that out into the world. And, you know, when they wear the Voodoo jersey, it's no different than talking to anybody that works behind the four walls of voodoo to build rifles or take orders or ship rifles out every day.
Yeah.
You know? So it's for us, it's the same.
So if you look at, you guys are looking at barrel technology, playing with twist rates, you got the actions that are coming up, the Bighorn, Zermatt's there, all the different ones you talked about, you know, Tikas and CZs and, you know, Bagaras and all these other guys. So there's that. Stocks, we know there's movement and things going on in stocks. Has anybody come to you scope-wise? Because you need the full-blown, you know, you need an attacker 5 to 25, but then those reticles aren't really, they can work. I mean, the floating dots definitely work, but if you go to a different reticle, then you start to cover up a little bit. So have people been talking to you from the scope side of the house to how do we pair this with the 22s to get everything out of that?
Yes, and the first ones to do that was Night Force.
Very cool.
You know, we've had an incredible working relationship with those guys. The 5 to 25 won't parallax down close enough.
Correct.
But the 7 to 35, the 7 to 35 ATAC-R was the one that we really keyed in on early. And talking to Sean Murphy and some other guys, and, you know, so we've, you know, in our competition, Voodoos, we run 7 to 35 ATAC-Rs with 60 MOA rails. Or 17 mils if you're a mil guy. So with a 25 yard zero, you can reach 600 yards and still have mechanical elevation in your optic.
Yeah. See, and that's the data.
But yeah, exactly. And you know, and you parallax close enough for those closer targets, but you have the balls to see I dropped an Allen wrench. You have the balls to see further and engage targets further and actually see your hits, which is incredibly hard at distance with a 22. So Leupold also approached us. We have some scopes from them. They were some of their newer line, the Mark V.
Yeah, the Mark V's, we've been talking a lot about them.
Yeah. I have one on my Accuracy International. I really like that scope. It parallaxes at 75 yards. So we've not seen anything from them yet that parallaxes more closely, but they're working on that. Schmidt Bender stepped up. They have an optic that parallaxes very nicely. But you also have the Vortex guys. Now, these guys seem like they're moving at the speed of light. A lot of our team people are sponsored by Vortex. They just released their, not an application for this platform, but their new 1 to 10, which
Yeah, I talked to Scott
cool
Parks
too.
Yesterday. In fact, he called me. So, yeah, I know Shot's going to be good for them. And
yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, everyone's really kind of keyed in on what's happening in the rimfire world. And the optics guys are doing a great job of jumping on and they're calling us and they're asking all the right questions. Trigicon actually started the conversation with us.
And that's what I wanted to bring up. Good thing you jogged my memory. I was going to bring that up before because in the Trigicon's release of the binos that do the wind that just came out yesterday, everybody's buzzing about the laser range finder with the wind capability to 500 yards.
Yep.
Most people who are looking at that are crowing about the 22 side of it because it is a 500 yard wind reader. They're saying if you're going to do 22 or 22 ELR, this product from Trigicon, now granted it's an $8,000 set of binos that will read the wind for you, but most people believe that I'm picking up on the ones that I'm paying attention to, in the 22 world, that's going to be a game changer.
Without a doubt. I'm pretty excited about that one. It's definitely something I want to run down at SHOT Show while we're there. And, I want to catch up with the Trigicon guys again to find out where they are on this optic that's going to parallax.
I see if Tony H is still working there. I used to do stuff with Tony. They did the win, like, in 2007. Trigicon came down to rifles only and did it's that machine gun mount they have that's all electronic, but they actually had it in an ACOG and it did wind and did all this other stuff. It was more Borgish because it had umbilicals and cords to things, but them and the Lockheed people came to rifles only and did the project that had the elements of this new product. And that was in, 2007. you know, this stuff's been out there for a while. But yeah, I really think Trijicon does some really cool stuff. It's just, it gets that military sort of focus a lot. And so most of us kind of leapfrog it, but it they're a big power player underneath the scenes.
I agree. And the three gun stuff that I do, I've been really interested in their Trijicon's SRO. I don't have one yet, but that's one of the things that I'm interested in, because there's some different technology in that than what's in typical RMRs. But you know, the other area, besides, you know, barrels and optics and, you know, the chassis that we've worked on and you know, what we've done with our good friend Ryan McMillan over at Graybo with stocks, is triggers.
Yeah.
And, you know, triggers are that highly subjective thing, right? You can have one trigger and you can have 10 guys pull that trigger and they'll all tell you something different about that trigger. And, you know, purely subjective component, you know, like, you know, there's some other things, you know, as well, you know, that are that way. And that's cool, because it's one of those human interface elements that, you know, people interface with things differently, you know, from an ergonomic standpoint, and, you know, how the whole sensory aspect of what it feels like to press a trigger. And, you know, some people can guess weight, you know, pull weight, and others can't, but they know it feels good. So what we did, you know, with our single shot, because I redesigned the fire control system, because energy is so incredibly consistent. Energy is so incredibly important to proper ignition shot to shot in a rim fire. You know, and it's not that it's not important in a center fire. It just happens differently in a center fire. So, because, you know, what we provide and what it is that we ship is consistency. And that's why you see on the target what you see. Well, to take that to the next level, you know, what has been a longstanding convention, you know, in what is all the clone actions out there, is the, you know, keeping this trigger technology with an angled sear face. And, you know, any number of guys can tell you different things about, you know, what that creates. And, you know, but it's always been one of those things that has hung around, and no one's really, you know, changed it or challenged it all that much. But you don't see Accuracy International using an angled sear face. And, you know, there's a number of others that don't use it either. But it's just continued to survive in this, you know, clone world, as I do air quotes. And I've been moving away from that. So a couple of years ago, Calvin, I've always been a really big Timney trigger guy. I love Timney triggers. And I've known those guys for a long time, John Beer and Jeff Dodd and Calvin. And, you know, they've made my triggers for me, you know, in the past, which they turned out to the masses as the 510U for the right-handed, 511U for the left-handed. And that was a trigger that, you know, was done to meet some very specific needs, given kind of the changes that we were seeing and what was the early stages of all these clone actions out there. So Calvin did another trigger for me with a different sear in it. And I've been shooting it for a couple of years. And that's the one that has the fast twist barrel on it. So I handed that rifle with this prototype technology in it, fast twist barrel, different fire control system, different trigger and all that. I handed that to Daniel Horner in September. And he's working on some, you know, he's gathering some data for me. So, you know, from what I have, you know, even before handing it to Daniel, it was like, hey, okay, so I'm going to go forward with this fire control system. But, you know, for the single shot, I really want to knock it out of the park. So spent a bit of time researching this and sent an email to a guy in Italy named Flavio Fair. And I kind of chuckle about this, because you picture, you know, this really kind of exotic picture on the front of a Harlequin novel, right? Because not only do you have Flavio the dad, but you have Flavio the son. So I'm communicating with Flavio and Fabio, and I sent him some SolidWorks models, and, you know, we collaborated over the course of, I was really nothing short of just a couple of weeks. And they sent me the Voodoo Flavio trigger, a couple of versions of it. Yeah, so that's the trigger that is going to be offered with our Ventress action. You know, because we want to be able to control what that consistency looks like. And that, you know, triggers are going to be that other, and a lot of people have stepped up in triggers, right? So you have obviously Timney, that's still a big player in the game, and Trigger Tech, and we use a lot of their, the Trigger Tech diamonds, and Bixen Andy has become really popular, and Elfman now.
I'm liking the Elfmans. They sent me two of them. I'm really digging them.
You know, we've talked to those guys, and Paul talked to them more than I have, but, you know, I really like what they're doing. I mean, I took one of their triggers apart, and like, you know, there's beauty and simplicity, but it's really incredibly effective how this was done. So so that's one I'm definitely going to keep watching here coming up, because I see really good things coming from Elfman.
Yeah, they kind of hit me about 6 months ago, maybe a little more. They kind of caught me on the blind. Hey, we're on the hide. We dig, you know, blah, blah, blah. We want to give you a trigger. And I'm like, yeah, all right, you know, and I'm playing with it. And then they upgraded it and changed something slightly between that one. And there's like a variation now, or, well, you know, a modification.
Yeah.
And so they sent me that. And so I have them in, and I'll tell you, they're working fantastic. And I like that people are putting that adjustabilities in the trigger shoes. You know, that like the AI comp trigger and things like that, right, that I can move it back. Tub does it, you know, all the let me set that. That's, again, part of that Olympic rifle adjustability, more comfort, more accuracy, you know, longer term. I could shoot all day and I'm not fatigued and beat up. But it's good to see that these guys are doing this without going, you know, making them unfield worthy. You know what I mean? Where I can't go on my range with the dust, this wind, and the sand, and then be sitting there with bottles of Ronson cleaning my triggers out all day, which does happen, but it's not happening as often as it could if people went the other direction.
Exactly. And that's a really cool thing to see. And, you know, when I first started, you know, well, not first, it was a little bit, you know, downstream of the trigger project, took an Onshoots 5018. I put it in a Voodoo action, and just the level of machining and redesign and making, you know, parts and all, I mean, it was a huge pain, but I learned a lot from it. And it's what told me that, hey, I there's very specific things I can expect to see by getting rid of that angled surface. And it's not that I didn't know that, you know, when Calvin made that trigger, but from a trigger that is a lot more complex, in its function than the Timney, there were some other lessons to be learned. And, you know, the first lesson I learned is I never wanted to do it again. But, you know, from a functional standpoint, it's why I ended up contacting, you know, Flavio Fair. So, you know, to kind of keep that same, you know, 700 package, that pinned trigger interface and all that, which, you know, in a round action is a good idea. So, but yeah, triggers are going to be really interesting coming up. I see a lot more happening in that.
It's amazing that there's so much we know that this is probably going to be a good thing that's out there in minor doses. You know, it's like micro dosing it. And it's like it's out and about, but on such a small scale, and we know it'll do pretty good, but it requires someone like you to take that step to put it into play and then to present it to the masses. I think of it like with the Gain Twist barrel. You know, that's been around for so long. It was a lost art. Then you get, you know, Tracy and Bartlett and all that, and bringing it back with me and Frank Green talking. And like I said, I'm shooting about six or eight of them right now. And mm-hmm. It's just been an amazing experience with them. And it took a little R&D to figure out what's the right gain for what we're doing today. What's the, you know, that like we've landed on a 3/4 gain, right? So like 8.25 to 7.5 instead of doing 8.25 to 7.25. That's what we mean by the 3/4, guys listening
right
out there.
Gotcha.
Instead of going 1-to-1, we're doing 3/4%, you know, 75%. So that kind of stuff. And then, you know, you're looking at the different twist rates. Instead of everybody just going, we've always done it this way, let's keep doing it this way, why do we want to? It's like, well, because now we're pushing accuracy envelopes like never before. Smaller targets, farther away, harsher conditions, you know, and we're pushing that envelope. So, yeah, while it worked in 1978 for our grandfathers, there's no reason we have to settle for that today because we're not shooting like our grandfather did. You know, so
Exactly.
You know, I kind of push the fundamental side in the human error, the mechanic of the human factor, I call it. You know, the human factor is a big thing in my conversation, but I'm not anti-technology. I just think, you know, certain times you go, okay, well, let's wait and see. And other times you go, oh, I see it immediately. You know, or it's like, hey, we've known about it. Do we try it? Who wants to be the first guinea pig to do it? Okay, we'll do it. And then it's like, wow, exactly. This is really cool.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I can't tell you how many people laughed at me when, you know, the few people that I told, you know, what I wanted to do with a 22. And, you know, and they chose to do other things, you know, over, you know, something like this. And then, you know, it turns into what it has turned into. But that whole mindset, Frank, exists in, you know, a number of different disciplines. And we kind of watch that and people get used to it. And, you know, you hear things that, you know, it doesn't take long for those things to become construed as conventional wisdom and no one questions it. And it's just that thing you have to do, right? Because that's what you were told or that's what you read on, you know, the internet or whatever the case, which is why bench rest is dying, you know, because you ask any one of those guys why they do some of the things they do or most of the things they do, and they can't tell you. They have no idea.
Yeah, they read it. It worked for Bob. Bob did it. Bob made a record. And it worked for Bob, so I should do it. And may have worked for Bob then, and Bob might have got lucky. Like, there was a discussion with the 338 stuff, and I've always said, you know, 300 grain has killed the 338, and 285 should be about max, and blah, 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 lighter bullets, all that stuff. And it's like, well, that one guy won that one event, and it's like, well, number one, he was probably pushing it over where I said the limit was. He was probably going in the 29s and not 2750. But the thing is, it's like, yeah, that's one guy who got lucky that one day with it. But if you look at the bigger picture, you know, let's look at the statistics of it. You know, well, okay, that guy got lucky. Can you repeat it? Can he repeat it? Can I repeat it? And if the answer is no, if only, you know, out of five of us, if only one of us can repeat it, then it's not something I really want to invest my time in.
Right, right. That, you know, that's not data. That's not something that you can go back to. You know, like in the books that Tony does, right? The impact data books.
Yep.
There's a lot of information in there, and you write that information down because you're pretty damn sure you can repeat it. You know, if you're in the same conditions and the, you know, if things are relative, then you can be pretty damn certain that, you know, you go back and do what you did, you know, 2 weeks ago and the result's going to be the same or really, really close.
Right. Right. Better record keeping, you know, means better results.
Exactly. And there's so much of that kind of information that doesn't exist in other areas. But yet it's for whatever reason, it's like it came out of the Bible. But it's not something that can be proven time after time. And, I keep going back to bench press.
I want to go into 22. So what's up with all the guys blowing down their barrels, man?
Oh my gosh, dude. So I went to this bench press match in Georgia somewhat recently, and I watched all these guys on this line. And, you know, you have fans and you have these one piece multi-axis adjustable rests, and you have guys that aren't even making physical contact with their rifle, their cheek's not on the stock, and they use their thumb and their trigger finger like a pair of tweezers.
Mm-hmm.
And they barely touch their trigger, and that's how they shoot. And but outside of that, I mean, they all eat ginger snaps. I haven't figured that out yet.
I love ginger snaps, dude.
Yeah. And I'm thinking that there's probably some weird mojo. I can't say.
Yeah, like a mint thing, right? Like, but the mint.
Yeah,
kind
yeah.
Of, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. So it's just a strange thing Blowing down the barrels, and you know, it's none of them will actually take a cold bore shot at a target.
Right.
They run some number of rounds through the, you know, through the gun, just arbitrarily down range in the direction of the target before they start shooting for score. And you know, I've seen that you don't have to do all that stuff. You can actually make a, you know, a hit based on your first predicted shot, you know, given what you know, and all that stuff goes away.
Right.
So, and I truly believe that that's why it hasn't been interesting to younger
shooters. Well, one guy saw somebody do it, and then that guy did well, so the guy next to him started doing it. 2 weeks later, that guy did well, so the guy next to him's doing it. And it's like a month later, it's his turn to do well. You know, it's just amazing. And that's why I kind of like it. To me, bench rest today is an engineering race. It's guys who try to design things and to come out with sort of proof of concept-y, but it's not a marksmanship shooter thing. It's a how well can I build this repeatable and get me out of the equation.
Right. That's exactly what I've seen is that approach. And, you know, it's so much unlike any of the other shooting games, disciplines, you know, where the onus of success is not placed solely on your equipment.
Right.
On your gear. And there has to be something between the ears, and there has to be some experience, you know, wrapped around, or it's all wrapped around experience, I should say. You know, and the outcome at that point is consistent. I mean, you see the same guys winning matches match after match, right? Or at least in the same guys are always in the top 10.
Right.
And there's a reason for that, because they're very well practiced. They've put in the work. They understand, you know, ballistically what, you know, how their system performs. And they know how to deal with the environment and make those changes based on the environment and what, you know, what kind of environmental impact has on wood. And so, that's the cool stuff. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, right? I mean, maybe not everybody's into that, but, you know, but it is something that based on all those criteria is repeatable, is predictable.
Yeah. I mean, we, like with you guys, we know the system's solid. So now how do you interpret that data you're collecting? How do you go out there? What's your practice schedule? What are you looking at? Because you can't argue with the system today. You know, that's not the weak link here. It's at least the game we're playing. You know, so you have
to be
able to, like you said, interpret the environmental conditions, interpret your data, make sure you recognize the changes in your ballistics through external conditions, and then you know how you feed your body,
right.
How you work you, what practice you've put into it. So that way there, you're now on the same level of your equipment and you're all working together.
Right, right. You're all a system. And that's the cool thing about 22 as it applies to all that, is because 22 is so honest with you. And you can either choose to listen to it or not, but typically when you don't listen to it, it makes a fool out of you, right? Because it is harder to shoot. I mean, you have a longer, you know, time and bore of the projectile, and you have more time because of that to make some error, you know, in your shooting technique that changes the impact, you know, the point of impact of that,
right,
of that shot. So, you know, that is the reason that people want to use 22 as a trainer. And
it's,
they want to
it's,
set
it's
their
milliseconds
up.
And microns, man. And it, we're
right.
Influencing those milliseconds and those microns with our movement and how we interact.
Right, right. And that's why you see in other disciplines that, you know, they're not trying to influence, you know, those things by not making the same types of contact with their system that everybody else does. And,
yeah,
you know, it's just that it's that mechanical engineering version of, you know, putting, you know, holes in paper versus.
Right. It's,
you know,
it's
that,
the,
that
it's the
hole,
smaller,
yeah,
lighter, faster bullet getting out of the barrel quicker. It's the 2 ounce trigger. So it's immediate. It's all these things that they're kind of doing to game that aspect of it, that dwell time,
right,
that you have.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's cool stuff. You know, it certainly holds the interest of a lot of people, and I appreciate that. And that's what makes it fun for us, is we get to serve that. And we get to be honest with that. And, you know, as long as we continue, you know, it's like, you know, we're racing our own race. We're not watching the guy next to us. Yeah. And that's the path that keeps us, you know, in this space and keeps us motivated to, you know, continue to raise the bar and do new things and even do things better than when we started.
You're definitely the lead car in this best part of the industry. I mean, it's Voodoo and then everyone else. And, you know, that's easy to see. Hey, we're on the hour, man. And I've kept you here and I know you got to go to work and stuff. So, we're in a good place to stop. I really appreciate you coming on and taking the time. I know you guys are super busy. You're through the roof. Shots around the corner. I'm sure I'll see you at SHOT Show and we'll have to grab a beer or something. But I really appreciate you taking the time and coming on the Everyday Sniper podcast. It's been awesome.
I really appreciate it, Frank. I appreciate the invite. And, you know, I appreciate your consistency, you know, probably more than anything else, because you've been a fixture in this for such a long time. And I don't know a soul that I've ever been around, you know, within this industry that doesn't know Frank Galley. And, you know, you get things done and you have a vision all your own that's pretty cool as well. So I appreciate that. It's certainly given us, you know, the community a place in Sniperside to, you know, go talk about these things. And I say this, you know, somewhat regularly, especially because I rarely, you know, these days go outside the rimfire, you know, threads. But, you know, it's a group of people that just get it. And they ask very serious, very intelligent and very genuine questions. And they, you know, they listen to the answer. And, you know, that makes it easy.
It's crazy. And one, I just changed yesterday the competition section. I added a rimfire section. Just for the comp, I renamed one of them, and it's going to make one that was kind of not as busy as the others. So it is now a rimfire competition section. I know guys put it in the regular section, and you guys, I mean, your thread is huge. I don't even know what the number is right now without looking. You know,
oh my gosh,
it's in the 80s or 90s, pages, isn't it?
Yeah. It just flipped over to 91 pages last night.
Wow. Yeah, that's huge, man.
Yeah, started in August of 2017. It was the first post in that thread.
Awesome. Stay on the line. I'm going to let this kind of do its out, and then we'll sign off offline when I end this. So we'll just let the intro music get out. But again, for everybody listening, thanks for listening. Thanks for commenting, sharing. You know, get it out there. You guys have been making this awesome. So thanks, everybody, for doing that. Thanks, Mike.
Thanks a lot, Frank. I really appreciate it.
Yep. Cool. Stay on the line, Mike. Quote will get off. It's over.
Yep.
All good stuff. They can hit. This is what is like an after the fade. What are we saying after the fade? Something I say during the music.
Yeah. Right.